And for all of those who are here in the service, let's turn in our Bibles to Proverbs 16, please. Proverbs chapter 16, and it's been a couple of weeks since we've been doing our study in Proverbs. We had vacation Bible school. I was out of town with the teenagers at camp, and so we're back into our study of Proverbs. And I don't know if you remember where we left off, but what we were discussing was the providence of God. In fact, out of all of the Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 16 is the chapter that deals the most, I believe, with the providence of God. And what we're going to see as we go through this passage is that wisdom is not just wisdom in the sense of practical understanding of how to handle situations, but really wisdom is wisdom in the light of God's providence and how God works in people's lives. God isn't distant, he's not far off. He is specifically involved in each of our lives. And there are times that we look at our circumstances and we think that God doesn't have any control of the situation. And in those situations, we need to understand that that's not correct. He is in control. He's working behind the scenes. There are details that we're unaware of. And God is going to do his work in our lives and the lives of the people around us. Now, just to kind of jog our memory, I'm going to go back and just kind of review a couple of the things that we talked about in past weeks. The first thing that we looked at was that we need to understand that God's providence is a mystery. It's not something that we can fully comprehend. The fact is that God is in control. God works actively in the lives of people. The things that happen are not happening by chance, but they're happening by God's design. On the other side, we need to understand that God really has given people the ability to make moral choices. And so when a person makes a bad decision, they can't say, well, God made me do that. We're not living in a fatalistic world. The reality is that God governs the world in such a way that he allows us to make decisions, and he limits those decisions. At times, he gives us freedoms that maybe we wish he wouldn't have given us as time goes on later on. But he uses that for a purpose. And sometimes we look back over our lives and we go, now I know why God let me do that, because he was going to teach me this lesson. And that would not have happened any other way. Or he worked in spite of that. He taught me his love and his grace. And so when we talk about God's providence, we talk about man's responsibility, there's a mystery side to that. And there's not, we can't fully comprehend it all. And we talked a little bit about that. We also got into these details that when we look at how God governs the world, how God chooses to manage our lives and the lives of the people around us, we are extremely limited in how much we're able to really understand what God is doing. You know, as we look at the situations that are right in front of us, a lot of times we don't have good clarity about them. As time goes on and we're able to kind of see the path that God allows us to go down, sometimes we can look back and we can see God's hand and we can see how he worked in those situations. But even as we look backward, there's still limits to what we understand, and there's still times that we don't know why God didn't do that there or why he did do it this way here. And so we have to trust the Lord in those things. But one of the things that we really emphasized is that God does not govern without his wisdom being fully engaged, without his love, without his grace, without his mercy, without his holiness. The fact is, when God works and moves the way that he does, he is not compromising himself in any way. He's not compromising his justice. He's not compromising his goodness. He's not compromising his witness or his wisdom. In fact, he's actually governing in the light of those things. And we have to learn to trust God, because sometimes from our perspective, he's not being wise there. He's not being good there. He's not being loving. But if we could see all the details, we would have to humble ourselves and say, you were right and I was wrong. Then we moved on to section two. We need to understand several guiding principles that we find in the Bible about God's providence. And so we began in chapter 16, verse 1. The first thing we saw is that wisdom understands that God governs over the hearts of men. You know, you and I have absolutely no power to change a man's heart. I so much wish that I could change people's hearts. The fact is, if I could change people's hearts, then this building would be full of saved people who currently are unbelievers and they're living for the world, and they have absolutely no desire to serve God. They have no desire to be in the church, okay? There are times that I look at Christians, and they're making really bad decisions, and I wish I could flip a switch and I could make them do that. Well, you know what's very interesting? God has the power to change people's hearts. And God doesn't do it by flipping a switch. What's interesting is God changes people's hearts by how he works in the circumstances of their lives. There are times that the way that God changes a person's heart is he lets them get in a car accident that puts them on their back for 6 or 8 months. There are times that the way that God changes people's hearts is he puts them in a situation that is absolutely impossible. There's nothing they can do to get out of the situation, and God forces them to look up instead of to look at themselves. There are times that God allows what we would see as almost a fluke situation, something that you'd never dream that could have happened, and God, in the set of circumstances, causes something to happen or allows something to happen that does that. Sometimes God lets us walk down a path of sin, and instead of stopping us at this point, he lets us go all the way to there, to where sin crushes us. And when sin crushes us, that is when we are humbled to the point to actually deal with it the way that we should. The fact is that God governs men's hearts. And he doesn't do it by flipping switches. He does it by the arrangement of circumstances and things in their lives that are completely outside of their control. And we have to trust God to do that in the lives of the people around us and even in our own lives. The second truth we saw is that wisdom understands that God evaluates the motives of men. You know, how many times does somebody say, "Don't judge my motives. You don't know why I did that." Well, there's somebody that does know why. He knows better than we do. There are times that we're convinced our motive is right, or we have convinced ourselves. Maybe that's the way I should put it. We have gotten to the place where we have convinced ourselves that our motive is right, and other people can see it's not. God knows it's not. God is the one who judges motives, and one day God exposes our motives. There's a passage in Matthew where Jesus says, "What you have thought in your heart and what you've said in secret will be shouted on the housetops." And not the point that you're going to listen to people speak your innermost thoughts on a housetop. The point is that he's making is that God's going to expose what goes on inside the heart. He lays it out, and he shows it to us, and sometimes he shows it to others. Truth number three, wisdom understands that trusting in God's sovereignty is the only way that we can have peace of mind in a troubling world. You know, Christians don't, well, some do. Maybe some of us have. But Christians are not people who should bury their heads in the sand and act like the world is perfect. The fact is, as Christians, we understand this is a fallen world. There are real, terrible situations that we encounter in this world. And the Bible doesn't gloss that over. The Bible speaks very honestly and very directly about human nature, about history, about the decisions people make, why they make those decisions. The Bible doesn't just stick our heads in the sand and say, "Oh, it's a perfect world, it's a rosy world." The fact is, the Bible lays bare the terrible depths of sin and the terrible consequences of sin. And the truth is this: if it's not for God being sovereign, then we cannot have the strength we need to face this world as it is. Sometimes I look at the unbeliever and I say, how in the world does an unbeliever cope with the life around them? The fact is, as time goes on, unbelievers cope with life by sticking their head in the sand, becoming extremely pessimistic, extremely negative. Sometimes they go to drugs and alcohol and sex and money, and they go after whatever they can to try to ease their conscience or try to give them some peace of mind for a short period of time. But those are all temporary things. The Christian doesn't have to do that. The Christian says there's a God in heaven. He's in control. And as bad as it gets in the world, he's still in control. He has a purpose in what he's doing, what he allows. And he's going to work in my life, and I'm going to trust him to do that. And we looked at Psalm 37 and how it says, "Fret not because of evildoers. Don't be envious at the workers of iniquity. Trust in the Lord. Do what's right. Delight in the Lord. He'll give you the desires of your heart. Rest in the Lord. Wait patiently for him." Psalm 37 is a powerful, powerful passage, and I hope that you'll go back to it from time to time. Now let's move to truth number four. Very important. Wisdom understands that God has a purpose for everything he allows and will move people and circumstances to their appropriate ends. Now, when I read this verse, some of you will probably go, "Ooh, that's not one I want to read very often." But we need to understand what the passage is saying. So in chapter 16, verse 4, it says this, "The Lord hath made all things for himself, yea, even the wicked for the day of evil." What exactly is that verse, that proverb saying? Is that verse teaching that God created people so that he can just destroy them? Well, there are some people that actually come to that conclusion. And I'll tell you that that's wrong, and if you think that, that's going to be a really miserable way to live life. But the point of the passage basically is this. God works in people and in circumstances to bring them to the place that they belong based on the decisions they've made. In other words, if a person is an evil person, and a person is making evil decisions, do you think it's appropriate for that person to be blessed in the end? Of course not. So what is it that causes them to ultimately face justice? It's God. In other words, God gives them space and God gives them time and he lets them move down this road. And as they think they're going to get away with it and as they push away from God and as they buck against his authority and they rage, we talked about that in Psalm 2. As they're weaving and moving, God is still directing them in a certain direction. And he's going to bring them to the appropriate end. And in the end, God is still going to be glorified even in that person's rebellion. Because God's going to demonstrate his justice and God's going to demonstrate his power. And he's going to demonstrate his patience and his long-suffering. Let me give you a couple of examples. I think the best example that comes to my mind is the story of Haman. You guys know Haman. Okay, so here's Haman, he's an evil guy, and he sees the Jewish people there in Shushan, and he says, "I hate the Jewish people, I want to see them destroyed, I want to see them ruined." Now what's interesting is it's not just that he hates those people, but there is actually a spiritual battle going on. Those are God's people, God has made covenant promises to those people. He's going to send his Messiah, and that's still before Christ comes. So if the Jews are just eliminated there in Shushan, what happens? You have no Messiah. You have no salvation. So you could say that God's promises are on the line, and this guy Haman has set himself against the Jewish people. But it's more than that. There is a person, a Jewish man, that he loathes, he hates, and his name is Mordecai. Every time he sees the guy, his day goes from being good to horrible. There he is again. And he just despises the man. And so Haman talks to his family and he complains about it. And finally they just say, "Haman, you're friends with the king. Just get rid of these people. You know, talk to him about it. Tell him how much this group of people is evil and they need to be gone." And so that's what he does. Goes to the king and he basically says, "Well, king, there's a group of people in your provinces that are, they're really bad. They're really evil. You need to get rid of them. They're a threat to your authority. They're a threat to your power." Well, the king isn't thinking too much about what Haman's saying. He's not processing this carefully. And he goes, "Okay, well, if you want to get rid of them, then get rid of them. That's what we'll do." And so Haman is really feeling very good about himself. And he's rising up in power. And he's plotting and he's planning. And he believes that he's going to fulfill the plan that he has. Now that's very evil. Now if you're a Jewish person and you're aware of Haman's plan, what are you thinking about God's providence? Where's God here? This man Haman is evil. How in the world can God let Haman do what he's doing? And it gets so far that Haman is building the gallows that he's going to hang Mordecai on. And he's not just building like a tree for, he's not just like, you know, putting a rope on a tree. It's like building this huge platform so that everybody can see his enemy die. He's a nasty person, really nasty person. And you go, Where's God? What's interesting is in the book of Esther, God's name is never even mentioned. And it's actually silent to speak to us. He's still at work. And so one night, very close to the end of this plot that's going on, Mordecai goes to Esther and he says, you need to go talk to the king. And if you don't talk to the king, your people are going to die. And she says, well, if I go to talk to the king, I'm going to die. And he says, well, you got to take the chance. You're going to die either way. So either you go and you meet him and things don't work out so well, or you don't go to meet him and things will work so well for all of us. And you know what she says? Okay, I have come to the kingdom for such a time as this. That's what her uncle says. And she says, if I perish, I perish. I'm going to go. Well, as this is all coming together, and I mean, it's coming together. Haman is, he's really excited. He's gloating. He's just thinking about how he's going to really get his enemy. No statement about God. But one of the nights right before this is going to happen, the king can't sleep. Like, what was it that caused it? Like, was it something in his soup? I mean, like, you know what it caused it? God's providence. Now, there's no explanation as to what, it's a very naturally occurring thing, but he cannot sleep that night. And so as he can't sleep, he calls in his men and he says, just read me the records because that'll put me to sleep, okay? Read the records and I'll go to sleep. So they're reading and he's trying to sleep and all of a sudden he hears about a plot to kill him. He says, wait a minute, what was that? Go back and read that. Well, there was a plot to kill you, and somebody fooled the plot. Who did that? Well, his name was Mordecai. What happened to this guy? Nothing. Really? Well, that's wrong. We can't do that. We gotta honor this guy. So the next morning, he's sitting there going, what am I going to do? I'm gonna honor Mordecai. How do I do this? And here comes Haman. He's just bouncing along, and he's all excited. And he comes to the king, and the king says, I'm so happy to see you. What do you think I should do for a person that I really want to honor? And Haman just like, that's me! What am I going to do? I'm going to get to hang my enemy up on a 30-foot gallows, and I'm going to get to destroy my enemies, and I'm going to get honored by the king. And he said, well, you know, you should have him stand on, you know, have your robe and be on your horse. And somebody shouts, this is the person the king wants to honor. And he says, that's a great idea. Why don't you go do that for Mordecai? All of a sudden, things have changed really fast. Now, we laugh. You know why? Because this is the appropriate end for Haman. Bottom line. And how did that happen? God did that. Folks, that's how God works. There was nothing in that story that seemed unusual except the arrangement of all the details. You could not have put it together any better. Yet every person in that story made decisions and they didn't even think about God in it. I mean, yes, Esther did, and yes, Mordecai did, but Haman, the king, these people weren't thinking about that. And this is how God works. The idea is that God is going to move things to their appropriate end. If you do evil, you're going to pay for it. And you do right, God is going to bless. And so even those who are set in rebellion against God, God's going to judge them. They're going to demonstrate God's righteousness and his patience and all those things. The fact is, God was patient with Haman. God could have stopped him at any point. And what did he do? He just let it play out. It's amazing. It's not teaching that God tempts people to sin. It's not teaching that people are not responsible when they sin. God's not the author of sin. God will allow believers to be tempted. And these people, the Jews who are aware of this story, they were facing incredible pressure. But the fact is, God was still working in details. Truth number five, wisdom understands that no one will escape God's justice. Verse 5 says this, everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though hand join in hand, he shall not be unpunished. Now, this verse is logically connected to the one before it. The one that talks about the fact that God is going to bring everything to its appropriate end. If you set yourself in rebellion against God, then don't be surprised when he punishes you. This verse is basically saying if you're proud, if you're arrogant, you're an abomination to God. What that means is that that's distasteful. It's very offensive to God. We don't tend to use the word abomination so much in our society anymore. But another way to put it is, it's extremely offensive. It's distasteful. When a person is arrogant and rebellious against God, God looks at them and says, "What are you thinking? Who do you think that you are?" And it says this, "Though hand join in hand, it will not be unpunished." The idea is that when people are proud, they connect with people who are proud, and they link together, and they believe somehow they can get around what God's going to do in their lives. The fact is that the wise man understands God always gets the last word. Bottom line, you can say a lot. You can go far. But when it's all said and done, you'll stand before God, and he will have the final word. God's ways can be resisted, and they often are, even by coordinated opposition, but this partnership in evil cannot stop God. He will have the final say in the matter. He always has the last word. Truth number six, wisdom understands that no situation is beyond God's ability to work out and to work through. Now, this is really important. We can face really bad circumstances. We can't. In fact, I'm not even going to say we can't. We will. That's the bottom line. We are going to face bad circumstances. Health challenges are going to hit all of us at some point. Financial issues at some point are going to hit people. Even somebody that has been in a good position throughout their whole lives, many times at the end of their lives, they don't continue in that position. That happens to many, many people. The fact is that relationships can really strain people. Circumstances outside of our control. We cannot tell the endless number of possibilities that we can face. But the truth is this, there is nothing you will face that God is unable to work through and work out. Nothing. He's able to do that. Look down at verse 7. It says, and this is very interesting, when a man's ways please the Lord, he, that's God, maketh even his enemies to be at peace with him. That's a really amazing statement. Now, that's not necessarily saying his enemies become his friends. It doesn't say that. It doesn't say that his enemies disappear. It doesn't say that his enemies start doing good to him. It says they're at peace with him. Now, your enemies may be at peace with you because you're strong enough they don't want to mess with you. That could be what it is. It could be that they are eliminated at some point. It could be that they're humbled at some point. There are all different kinds of ways that God can do this. But the point is, if God can take your enemy who wants to destroy you, he wants to fight you, he wants to hurt you, and he can make that person be at peace with you, that's pretty amazing. You ever tried to mediate between two people who are really, really at odds with one another? Well, In another proverb, Solomon says, you know, if you get involved in a situation that doesn't involve you, it's like grabbing a dog by the ears. What happens when you grab the dog by the ears? Well, number one, you're going to have to hang on. Because if you don't, he's going to bite you. And you're probably going to get bit either way. And the idea is that when you get into a situation, you try to mediate. Sometimes you get caught in the middle and you get beat up. That's the bottom line. If even a person who wants to be the peacemaker, wants to help two people get right with one another, if that person gets beat up, then how in the world can God take an enemy and put you at peace with them? Well, it's God's providence. He's able to do that. He's able to work in those impossible situations. You know, look at the story of Joseph. His brothers hated him. And some of it he provoked. Hey, I just want you to know what I dreamed yesterday. You're going to bow down to me. Oh, really? We don't like that idea. You know, I mean, the young guys, yeah, the sun, the moon, and the stars are going to bow down to me. And all your stacks of grain, they're going to bow down to my stack of grain. And they said, we hate you, Joseph. You know, why is it that you get the honored position? We're the ones out there working. And these boys, they wanted to murder their brother. Instead, they sold him as a slave. Yet at the end of the story, what's going on? They're embracing one another. It's amazing. Now, it took a lot of years. It took some very unusual circumstances. But that's what God did. I mean, look at the Apostle Paul. I mean, if you doubt that the Christian faith is a genuine body of truth, look at Paul's life. And you ask yourself, how could a man who hated Jesus and the gospel, how can he go from that position to being the greatest spokesman for the Christian faith of his time? It's the power of God. God's able to do things that you and I have no ability to do. We have to learn to trust him in the midst of circumstances. Truth number 7. Wisdom understands that God moves our decisions to accomplish both his secret and revealed purposes. Look at it in verse 9. It says that a man's heart deviseth his ways, or his way, but the Lord directeth his steps. I'm going to read that again. A man's heart deviseth his way, but the Lord directeth his steps. To put it in very simple terms, when a person makes, you know, some decisions we make, they're snap judgments, all right? We do make snap judgments. Those usually turn out to be not so good, the snap judgments. But a lot of times, when somebody really has a big decision that they're going to make, it weighs heavily on their mind. They think about it a lot. They think about pros and they think about cons, and they go through a lot of turmoil and trouble, and they just fret a lot, and they plan out every single detail. Anybody a planner in here? You know what I'm talking about? Like I can be this way sometimes. Not in everything, but in some things. Like, you know, you have, this is what I'm going to do, and if this statement is made and this person responds this way, then that'll be my answer here. And then if this happens, then I'll go to this one, but then I can go here, and I can go here, and I can go here. And, you know, if you just laid it down on a piece of paper, you'd go, wow, that's a tree right there. That's how a lot of people are, you know, just like every detail, I got to think it out. And you know what's amazing? when it all happens, guess what? Cut down the tree. What I didn't think was going to happen is what happened. Anybody ever been there? Just cut down the tree, throw it away, grind it up. All of those options that I was considering, they didn't happen. And that's so often the way it is in life. You know that proverb is saying? You plan and plan and plan. But at the end of the day, God's the one who puts you where he wants you. You know, I look at a lot of times our young people, they just labor over certain decisions. You know, do I go to this college or do I go to that college? Do I major in this or do I major in that? Oh, don't worry. Just you major in something because you'll change it 3 times before you're done with college, all right? That's just how it works. Oh, you go ahead. You do your degree because when you get done, it's probably not what you're going to do the rest of your life. That's just the way it works, all right? No, the bottom line is that we can plan, but it's God who ultimately controls the outcomes. And when we make those decisions, he ends up putting us where he wants us. And so we rest in God's care. I mean, God doesn't want to destroy your life. He loves you. He cares about you. And when that decision is coming down to be made, and all that pressure and all that fear and all that anxiety, God's going, well, what you do is going to be right where you need to be. It's okay. Don't worry about it. God works that way. It emphasizes that while people make decisions based on internal thoughts and deliberating and all these plans, God is ultimately the one who directs where they go. He's influencing the decision-making process, often through factors that are completely outside of their control. He really is. Truth number 8. See if we can finish this or not. We'll find out. We'll try. We'll see what happens. Truth number 8, wisdom understands that God's ways are always just. Verse 11, a just weight and balance are the Lord's. All the weights of the bag are his works. Now, you know, when we go to the grocery store, we just look at the price tag and we put in our card and we don't even think about the cost, all right? Well, some of you think about the cost. But, you know, some people don't think about the cost. Well, I want cereal. That's the one I want. I'm going to put it in the bag. Some people, they, you know, to calculate. I want to save every penny I can, you know, for the unit price here. We go to the scale and we put the bananas, we put whatever the fruit is, and it weighs it, and then it gives us our price. Well, in those days, it wasn't like that. When you went to the market and you said, I want such and such an amount of food, well, they would have little stones, little weights. And those little weights, they would put on a scale, and then that would be on the one side, and then the produce or whatever you're buying would go on the other side. Well, you know what people would do? Well, you can guarantee, you know what they'd do. They'd trim the weights down a little bit, all right? Because they wanted to keep a little bit of the produce and charge them a little bit more. They would cheat people. Some people would do that. Lots of people would do that. Well, what the scriptures are basically saying is this: a just weight. In other words, if it says it's a pound, it's a pound. It isn't 1.875, it's 2, you know, it's what it's supposed to be. There's no trimming. The just weight is God's. He then goes on to say this: all the weights of the bag are his work. He's really basically trying to say this. You know that people cheat other people. That's what happens in a fallen world. It isn't right, but it's what people do. He says, but God doesn't do that. If you ever see justice on this side of eternity, then it is an imperfect reflection of God's perfect justice. And his whole point is, look, when we talk about God's providence, what he allows, what he doesn't, what he limits, where he stops, when he takes justice, how God works in situations, he's just in how he does it. You may not see it at the time, but there will be a day that you will see it. Or maybe you'll never see it, but whether you see it or not, it's true. And I'll give this illustration. I remember when I was first learning how to drive. Okay, I remember I got my learner's permit, and I was like, I'm driving. And so I told my mom, I want you to teach me how to drive. She probably regretted that. So I remember this very vividly. Get in the car, we had this little red caravan, and I'm driving down the road from Main Road to where my parents are. It's about a mile along this road. And there was a little yellow line down that road. And I remember while I'm driving, I'm looking at the yellow line. And I'm like, okay, you know what I'm talking about? And the car's just going like this. And my mom's like, stop, stop, you're going to kill me. You can't do this. I'm like, Mom, I'm looking at the line. She's like, don't look at the line, look ahead. But Mom, the line, I got to make sure I don't run off the line. Look ahead. Okay, that is a great example of how we need to look at God's providence. The truth is, we look at the yellow line. And when we look at the yellow line, you know what we do? We go this way and that way. We overcorrect constantly. And God says, look ahead. There's a big picture here. It's not about the line here. Not that that isn't important, okay? It's important. But if you keep your focus there, you're going to drive straight where you're supposed to be, and the line's going to be here, and your tire's going to be here. As long as the focus is up ahead, you're okay. If something's coming that's dangerous, guess what? You're going to be okay. But when we look at our circumstances, we don't look ahead. We look at the line. And if you look at the line, you're going to overcorrect constantly. You're going to end up in your neighbor's lane, and you're going to end up on the side of the road. You're going to go back and forth, and it's bump, 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 you know, and your mom's going to lose it. Or, all right, your mom's going to lose. My mom, she lost it. That's how it works, right? And this is how God's providence is. We get so upset with God because we're just looking at the immediate. He says, there's a big picture here. There's something I'm doing in you and in the people around you. And I have time to work. And if you could see my perspective and you knew where you will be after we go through the process, you won't be upset at me. But you don't have that ability to see ahead. So trust me, because I see ahead. The fact is, God's ways are just. He doesn't cheat people. He doesn't do what's wrong. He will do what's right. Truth number 9. Wisdom understands that our decisions for good or for evil have consequences and are significant. I think many times when we talk about an issue like God's providence, there'll be people say, well, you know, if God's in control, then I'm not responsible. Well, folks, That's the wrong conclusion, all right? Let me just put it there. And I'll tell you how you can know that. Because from verses 12 all the way down to verse number 31, over and over and over again, in a chapter that is really emphasizing God's providence and his sovereignty and how he works in people's hearts and how he's involved in circumstances, he brings things to their end, and all these things going on in the heart, God is the one who ultimately controls the outcomes. In that chapter that emphasizes God's providence, Solomon emphasizes our responsibility and the effects and the causes when we do right and when we do wrong. Listen to some of these examples. Verse 12, it's abomination to king to commit wickedness. The throne is established by righteousness. Bottom line, you're a wicked king, you won't last long. That's what he's saying. 13, he says this, righteous lips are the delight of kings. They love him that speak right. Well, the fact is this, if a person speaks correctly the way they should, they know it's appropriate, they say what's right, people appreciate them. If you don't, they won't. Verse 14, it says a wise man knows how to pacify anger. Well, on the other side, if a person doesn't know how to pacify anger, they're being foolish. They're responsible. Verse 16, it's better to get wisdom than to get gold. If you live for gold, guess what? At the end of your life, you don't have what you really need. If you live for wisdom, you have something that has true value. He says in verse 17, he says, he that keeps his way preserves his soul. A person who's careless in the way that he lives, he's careless in what influences him, that person's going to get crushed in life. But the person who is very cautious, the person who makes godly decisions, the person who lives in the fear of the Lord, the person who thinks through situations and thinks about what God says and what God doesn't say and makes his decisions in the light of that, guess what? God is going to preserve that person. His decisions matter. Verse 18, pride goes before destruction. If you have an arrogant spirit, you're going to fall and fall hard. Haughty spirit before a fall. Verse 20, he that handles a matter wisely shall find good. He that trusts in the Lord, happy is he. I'm just giving you some examples. I actually highlighted all of them going through, but the point is this. You're responsible. Just because God's in control doesn't mean that you throw caution to the wind and say, well, you know, whatever happens, happens. It was just appointed that way. It was ordained that way. That's just the way it works. No. God says, be responsible. Make wise decisions. If you don't make wise decisions, it will hurt you. You make godly, wise decisions, you'll be blessed. In other words, just because God's in control doesn't mean he'll micromanage what you do and don't do. He gives you the freedom to make good decisions and bad. And you'll experience the outcomes. The fact is this, he's still in control even though he does that. And then I move to the last point, and that's this. Wisdom understands that no human decision will ultimately throw off God's purposes. Verse 33 says this, the lot is cast into the lap, but the whole disposing thereof is of the Lord. You're responsible. What you do has consequence. But at the end of the day, God will still accomplish his purposes. I look at the story of Haman, and I look at Mordecai, and I go, God let Haman do all kinds of crazy things. And at the end of it all, what happened? He was hung on his own gallows. At the end of it all, Mordecai and Esther are heroes, and the Jewish people are preserved, and God continues his work in his people. In other words, God's sovereignty was not, Haman was pushing against God's sovereignty. He thought he could get away with it, and God in his governance was giving him the freedom to do what he did. He said, you want some rope? I'll give you a little bit more. But eventually I'm going to stop, and then you're going to face the consequences. And that's how God works. So I move to this final section, peace of mind because of God's providence. Let me just go through this very quickly. Number one, when you feel overwhelmed, you need to remember that God is in control. He's taking all the little details of the circumstances that you're facing. He's weaving them together to accomplish his good purposes. That's really important. Number two, when you're mistreated, You need to remember that God is in control and will limit the extent of the injustices you face. He will give you the means to endure those injustices, and he will turn the situations around in his own way, in his own time, for his glory and your good. And in the end, he will vindicate you and judge those who have caused injustice. I'm going to tell you what I just read to you. It's really important that you understand that, and you believe that, and you live in the light of that. When you're praying, you need to remember that God's hand is personally involved in the very details that move the hearts of men and influence the ultimate outcomes of their decisions. There'd be no point in praying if God was not ultimately in control. There'd be no point in praying if God was simply a micromanager who didn't give people the ability to make decisions. The fact is that we pray because we have both freedom and God is sovereign. Next, when I'm burdened for people, I need to remember that God's timing and ours is not always in sync. He's able to do things that we cannot do, and therefore we need to trust him to work in ways that only he can. When I'm afraid, I need to trust in his goodness, power, and ultimate purposes. And when I feel that I cannot change, I need to remember that it's God who works in us both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Now you might say, I didn't have the time to write all that down. It's okay. When we upload the sermon audio, there'll be a PDF and you can get the notes, all right? But those truths are extremely important. When I think about the Christian life, some of the things that we've been talking about in church lately, these are fundamental to being a victorious Christian. I mean, we're going to face hardship. We are going to go under the gun and face pressure. And we have to rest in the control of our good and all-wise God. It's very important. And so I hope you will not forget those things. I hope you'll internalize those things. And I hope that together we'll live in the light of them. Let's bow our hearts together for prayer, please. Father, we were reminded tonight that you are the king and you govern your creation according to your perfect wisdom. The things that you purpose to do, you will accomplish. And the circumstances we face are not outside of your control and care. I plead with you, help us to trust you in the midst of these circumstances. Pray for individuals here who may face tremendous pressures, even as we sit here tonight, that your hand would comfort their hearts, that you would give them hope, that you would strengthen them, that you'd pour grace into their lives in this time of need. I pray for those who will face difficulties. As we speak, they're not there, but they will down the road. I pray that you'll help this to be something that strengthens and helps them so that when the evil day comes, they will be able to stand because their heart is fixed on truth. We ask that you'll help us to be faithful, victorious Christians. We ask it in Christ's name. Amen.